Okay, great. So we've just prepared a short presentation to run through about our proposals for Gala 2024 and the additional arena shows for next year.
Can you tell us who you are?
Yeah, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, well, sorry, if you switch to the next slide. What was it, introductions? Yeah, and we'll go through introductions first and I'll go back to the agenda. So I'm Laura, I'm the production manager at Gala Festival.
Hey, I'm Luca, I'm doing site production management at Gala Festival this year.
Will from Methods, working on operational support for Gala.
I'm James, also from Methods. Will and I are new to Gala this year. We've been brought in to help support the operation of the event.
Hi everyone, I'm Dan, head of sustainability at Gala, social and environmental side.
Sorry, can I ask, who's from the council and who's from the company?
Hiya,
Annie Weiss and Charlie Sims.
We're from the events team.
Are you council members or council
staff?
So we're from the promoter, Gala.
You're from the company that wanted to put the event on.
Yeah, that's right. And then,
My name's Annie White. Event Operations Officer, and this is my colleague Charlie Sim, Senior Events Officer.
Right, okay.
Sorry.
That's all right. Do you want to flip back to the agenda? Yeah, so, I mean, we've run through the introductions. So, we've put together a short presentation, and we've basically made slides on these kind of key agenda points in bold, based on concerns that have been raised in the consultation so far and from our previous meetings that we've had. So we'll go through all of those agenda points, and then we've made some supplementary slides on some other issues that might be of interest to you, but once we get round to the Q&A we can discuss those if you'd like to discuss them further. But we thought we'd just keep it brief, focus on things that we think that you'll like to know about. We'll keep the questions and feedback till the end, if that's okay, and we'll just hopefully be able to answer as many of your questions in the presentation, and then to avoid kind of, to keep it kind of short and sweet, we'll just do all the questions at the end, if that's all right. Can you go to the next slide now? So I just wanted to touch on the event consultation and the process of that thus far. So a couple of weeks ago we met with the members, the hall councillors, and had a meeting with them to discuss our proposals and take on their feedback. We also met with the Friends of Peckham Rye that week as well, and did the same thing. The consultation and the letter drop then went out on the Friday after that, on the 17th of November. The purpose of having those meetings with the ward councillors and with the Friends of Peckham Rye as kind of key stakeholders in this process, we hope that if there were anyone who hadn't opted into the stakeholder process via the council or had received a letter, that they might be able to spread the word via forums and their own networks as well. And then we've obviously invited people through the letter drop and the emails on the stakeholder list and invited them to this meeting today. Just to clarify with the process, if anybody didn't receive a letter or an email, I can provide details of how you need to opt into the Southwark mailing list after the presentation today, or if you'd like to find out how to do that. We've also, everybody who confirmed their attendance via the community at This Is Gala email, we've added you to our stakeholder list so that you will then be any further communication from us, you will be on our list for that. So if you don't want to be on that list, or you didn't directly confirm your attendance via the email and want to, we can take down your email after this meeting and make sure that you're added to our list. Also, if you do want to opt out, then let us know as well and we can take you off the list. I just wanted to clarify that in first instance. So hand over to Will now to go into the event.
Okay, so just a brief, thank you, Laura, just a brief overview of the event plans for this year. Gala remains very much the same event previously, same operating times, same capacity, which is Friday, Saturday, Sunday, from the 24th of May onwards. Monday, we're looking to add a new family day. That will have free attendance for those aged over 65 and under the age of 5 to try and broaden the age range of what we're appealing to in the park and the programme we can offer. And then the head end there, Wednesday 22nd of May and Thursday 23rd of May, two one-stage shows that will have a headline artist, very different to Gala itself. It will be a very different style of programming, very different genre. The talent for that isn't fully confirmed, or we're not privy to be able to speak about that just yet. But both those days will be different and will broaden the appeal for the events that are being put on in the park. In terms of the impact that might have on the community, because their live music shows, not the electronic music show, multi-stage festival that Gala is, those shows will have a smaller noise exposure window of about an hour to an hour and a half while the headliner is performing, but it will be much more relenting than the usual Friday, Saturday, Sunday days of Gala. And due to the fact that it will just be one stage as well, not the full four, five, six stages of the festival, the noise containment itself will be very different, and there'll be more control there. In terms of the build period and the break period, which restrict access to the park, the build starts on the 12th of May. The first 2 days are just for getting ground protection down and starting to put in our permanent fence line, and we try to restrict as little footprint of the park as possible during those first 2 days. While we're adding potentially three additional events here, our tenancy in the park will only increase from 19 to 21 days. So there's only 2 days extra tenancy. Mia, could you advance the next slide, please? Noise management. So briefly touched upon this in terms of the difference between the 3 days of Gala, the additional family day on the following Monday, and the two live shows before it on the Wednesday and Thursday. Much the same as previously, we've engaged a very competent professional noise management consultant. They're called F1 Acoustics, and you'll see on the plan here there are some yellow pins. Those yellow pins are our venues. That's where the noise is fundamentally coming from, aside from background noise and the crowd themselves. And then there are several monitoring points: Parklands, Duke's Court, St Alden's Road, and Cullerton Road. We monitor from those 4 points to make sure we're staying within the music noise limits that are set out within the licence. Those are science-based limits which are created in the licensing process and set out by the licensing authority to us. With that in mind, we're really keen to be totally responsive to any complaints or concerns during the event, whether that's Gala or the additional concerts that we're looking to stage in the park. And for that reason, there's a community hotline. That community hotline will actually be available right from the start of the build period, not just through the shows themselves. So for the whole time that we're active within our tenancy of the park, that community hotline can be used to flag any issues, anything that's seen either within our perimeter or around it, that our management team may be able to respond to. On the show days itself, there'll be a dedicated community liaison manager in place on site for the full operating period, and they'll be able to stage a multi-agency response to any concerns that might be had. So it might not just be noise, it could be litter issues around the park, potentially traffic issues, but that allows us to be totally receptive to anything that anyone wants to speak to us about. In terms of noise management, if that hotline's called, we have multiple people within the noise management team on site, qualified acousticians that can either look at how the levels and EQ of the sound is on site and adjust that to help mitigate any issues, make sure that we're all compliant within our levels within the site, but also attend the vicinity of any addresses the complaints might be coming from
and allow us to respond and ensure that we're still compliant with those two. A lot of this can change just with weather, humidity, wind direction, other background noise levels. So while it's very variable, we're keen to be very responsive and dynamic with that approach. Next slide, please, Mia. And Luca for site management.
Thank you, Will. So this is a little overview of our site design, which follows a very similar pattern to last year. It's the same layout and the same footprint that we take up. Generally, the infrastructure follows a very similar pattern to last year as well. The differences are that we might amend a few things in terms of the entrance lanes, and you may notice this red hashed out area at the bottom of the south of the site. That's in reference to the arena show days, which will take place on Wednesday and Thursday, where we won't be using the entire site. So we'll only be using one stage and the north side of the site with a lower capacity. The production route is still the same, going via the cafe, and we intend to increase staffing around that area. Next slide, please. In terms of waste management, so we're looking to improve this for this year. As usual, we always try to improve year on year. So it's going out to tender to multiple companies, which we're just talking to at the moment and understanding what parameters they need to put in place. There will be a zero waste to landfill policy that will be agreed with them, and the majority of the waste will go towards energy production. In terms of toilets, we're happy with our supplier that we used last year. We've used them for a few years now and they know the event well. We have a large amount of toilets around the site, which works pretty well for internal. I think we need to do some improvements on the external, especially around the entrance where people come in and kind of loiter during the beginning of the event. So we're looking into increasing toilet provisions around that area. Next slide, okay, let's pass him back to James.
Yes, this is me. I get to talk about Lime Bikes, which is very exciting. So we understand that these Lime Bikes are a nuisance in and around the park, and everywhere else, especially when this event rolls in. So we've prioritised trying to mitigate this and improve things for you guys for next year. The first thing to note, which is a real win, is that the whole of Peckham Rye, not the common, but the Rye itself, is now an exclusion zone for Lime Bikes, which means that the riders of them are subject to a fine if they leave them within the footprint of Peckham Rye, and that's new since this summer. But despite that, we're going to work more closely with Lime Bikes, the operator, next year around their provision for drop-off zones and pick-up zones relating to ingress and egress for Gala and the associated events. So we need to work more closely with the operator because the owner should be on them to look after their hardware. However, we're not going to trust them to do that. We're going to assume they're going to fail. And within our internal teams of security and site management crew, we will also be doing a sweep once people have arrived at the festival each day to ensure that bikes aren't being left in hazardous places. We don't want to be blocking pathways in the park or having them pile up on pavements around the outside. So if Lime Bikes don't do it themselves, we will send the team out after ingress to make sure that bikes are being left in sensible places, and that's being built into our plans for next year.
Just very quickly, I know you're going to take questions at the end, but just very quickly, is that Lime Bikes in the generic sense or Lime Bikes specifically? Because there are other companies that do the same thing.
You're right, very quickly, although we'll circle back to questions at the end. Lime Bikes, we know about the exclusion zone, and they're a particular operator that we can work with and try and encourage them to look after their bikes. We appreciate there are other operators as well, so in terms of our crew going out and moving bikes, we'll move anything that's been put in a stupid place rather than in just Lime Bikes. But I'll sit down.
Handing over to Dan for ground reinstatement.
Hi everyone. So the ground reinstatement, that was something that took too long, which happened 2 years ago. We have since made some changes to make sure that this doesn't happen again. One of the reasons it happened again was we failed to have a bit of oversight over a few chains of suppliers that were doing it, and it wasn't monitored effectively and it wasn't done properly. Since then we've removed the degrees of separation between Gala and the direct suppliers who will be managing those issues. So going forward, particularly Laura and myself will be directly overseeing and ensuring that that does not happen again. We have already procured a ground reinstatement supplier for this year, so they will be coming They are already ready to as soon as we're off site. This supplier is someone who is a trusted supplier. They've done great work at a Southwark event, and the parts team over there have given us their approval for that particular supplier.
Who are they?
They're called Sterling Groundworks.
Thank you.
Next slide, please. So yeah, I look after a few things like community projects, charity fundraising, accessibility, welfare. So all of those topics are something that I'm happy to talk about, but just focus on this one because I believe that this has come up most frequently amongst stakeholders. So we do a survey each year on the amenity grassland on the site to look for nesting birds. The ecological consultant has never seen a nesting bird there. However, we have seen feedback that they're not, people maybe not quite sure about these results, or there's a level of doubt. So,
sorry, can I just clarify? You mean actually within the site itself?
Yes, sorry. So yeah, I'll clarify.
You mean within the fencing?
Within the site area. So they say that there's no nesting birds there, but there's moderate potential and high potential in neighbouring areas.
And there's undergrowth very close to that.
And there's
site.
Undergrowth close to
and
it.
And are you monitoring that?
And we don't go near that during that period. There is a level of noise, but
because
the
customers do.
Customers may do, yes, but the ecological consultant hasn't made significant recommendations on us to intervene other than to kind of like mitigate and prevent any kind of like heavy stuff going near there. That said, based off feedback we've had previously, we're looking to one, maybe do another survey because potentially that's, you know, we want to look more into this. And then we'd also like to, as we spoke with friends, Peck and Ryan, release some voluntary budget for some kind of environmental biodiversity park related project, which will be decided by, I guess.
Sorry, who's going to do that?
Are you talking about?
Sorry.
I'm just checking who you think is going to do that.
Do what?
What you just said.
Submit voluntary work. No, it's budget that we would provide,
yeah,
for which
would
be decided by stakeholders where that should go. So we would pay, we would finance it, but how that would be spent would be for stakeholders, and we thought friends would be the best person to decide where that was. It's an offer. Next slide, please.
Were there going to be any talk about the trees? Have you got a slide
We just wanted to keep it super quick as possible and then go straight into Q&A. So,
the trees are going to be removed,
and
I think
there's
going
to be trees removed.
We're not removing any trees.
No trees are being removed.
No, we've never removed.
I think there may be a confusion with the flood alleviation
plans.
Yeah. I've got confused with the flood alleviation plans, which are completely separate.
Can I ask a question directed up this end of the room? Is this going to be, are these people paying for everything? Does Southwark have to pay anything at all for this? Do they have to pay for the policing, the clearing up afterwards, extra street cleaning, anything else that these people are not paying for?
No. In a word, no.
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 Okay, and why are these people doing this, in a word?
Money.
In two
money.
Words.
Money.
All right, well, I'll give you the answer. One word is for people, but the other word is to money. Does Southwark make money from this?
Oh, yeah.
And how much money?
Because
I'll tell you why I asked, because I've looked at Southwark's accounts, and I can't really find any sort of mention of this in the accounts for last year to say that we did this, and this amount of money came in, and maybe this is how it was spent on services for the people of the borough. So, can I ask, maybe you won't answer this, but how much are you paying for this?
Yeah, I don't think we can talk about this.
No,
so just to follow on from that.
Can you say that you're paying for everything?
Yes.
There's no extra cost.
No, we pay.
It does policing, you're paying for it.
Yeah.
If there's extra street cleaning, you're paying for it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And just to follow on from your point, I've looked into this company's financial returns.
Yes.
And they're now under a capital investment company, so the actual nature of the company that started these festivals has changed. They now have shareholders, they have lots of shareholders. Mm-hmm. So for me, going from 3 days to 6 days, which is extreme, because you don't have to live next door to it.
Could I answer to the, I think, the point about this company structure?
Well, let me just finish my point first.
Yes, of course.
Then you can come back.
Sure.
Is that it's a public park, and obviously the council has running costs for that public park, and it's very hard for councils at the moment because of, you know, 13 years of successive cuts. But it's very hard for us as you know, public and constituents to sort of understand just what the benefit is when how much the council gets paid is, and I understand why it's, you know, part of the confidentiality clause. So it's quite abstract for us to understand, if that makes sense. So for, you know, to go from 3 days to 6 days is like is doubling the footprint, not the footprint in size, but it's doubling the presence of the event, the impact, and that includes the groundworks impact as well. It's going to be more work fixing the groundworks. But when I look into, you know, sort of how this company has changed over the years, and it got 271,000 arts funding recovery funding, it got 50,000 COVID recovery funding, and then I see suddenly there's all these new shares, and now it's the one of the directors is a capital investment company who have a portfolio of 20 entertainment companies, and their reason for existing, quite frankly, is to raise investment in shareholders and provide returns. So I'm questioning why, in that small park, suddenly this weekend festival, and I will agree, it's great for those 3 days and the acts and the people that go there. I tend to go away that weekend because 2-3 years ago, there wasn't any noise control, trust me, it wasn't happening. And I still don't believe it does happen effectively. But I don't mind going away for a weekend, so there can be a weekend festival there.
Not all of us can.
No, I know. But 6 days becomes a problem for me. And it'll become a problem for a lot of people who've got children, who have to go to work. you know, when you're wanting to sort of run these events, and I guess the extra days are in the evening, it's not okay.
There's apart from not being able to use our park properly for that period, we can't even enjoy our gardens.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the time, it's a lovely time of the year. And that's when gardeners are busy and we're out in our garden. You know, that's denied to us.
Can't open your windows if it's a hot day.
Somebody said 21 days all told for the build up, the event, and so on. In the prime time of the year, not now, not in the middle of the winter when nobody goes to the park, but in those few months in the summer, you're taking out virtually best part of 1 month of the summer.
Which we don't get back.
And the people that do go to the park, who are going to go there, let's say, with their dogs, they're all going to have to go to one bit that's left open. So that bit of the park is going to be less nice for some people.
Less accessible.
So it's not like, oh, you're going to shut it down 3 weeks in a year. You're talking about 3 weeks in a prime part of the year. It's just too long.
Which
it's just too much.
We can't get that back. You know, we can't have summer in October, can we? No, it's finished. So I've got a couple of questions. First of all, why did the event leave Brockwell Park?
Can I
just go back to the money issue? You'll never know because it's commercially sensitive. But in fact, the Friends do know how little goes back into the park.
Okay.
Which is, that is not a Ghana issue, that's a Southwark
issue.
Just a
general issue.
We, as you say, you cannot, I don't know why it has to be secret. Maybe they're embarrassed about how little the park benefits. I quite like to go back to your first page. You don't actually mention that this is a footprint of 50,000 people over 6 days, which that site cannot sustain. You don't mention it. You did not mention it on that poster, did you? On your screen.
Are you talking in terms of damage to the ground?
I'm talking about a footfall of 50,000 people over 6 days, which that site cannot sustain.
What?
It can hardly sustain 3 days, and we won't talk about the reinstatement because it was not acceptable.
Yeah,
and I don't believe... you're talking about ecology. If that ground is compacted by 50,000 people walking on it, it's going to be unusable by birds, insects, and any other creature that wants to use that site. You don't actually mention that either. It's not to do only to do with the trees and the shrubbery, it's to do with the actual land.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd quite like to find out why you want to extend it to 6 days. Even a very large event in Somerset doesn't inflict 6 days of noise on residents.
Yeah.
Why? Can you tell us why you think you have to have 6 days?
So one of the driving factors behind expanding the number of show days is so that the kind of offering can be broadened, because we know that gala, whilst we consider it broad and very inclusive event, it's not going to be to everyone's taste. It's got age limits. It's not open to everyone, and we've heard that as a point that it doesn't feel inclusive if you're not into that music. So the idea of adding the family day on the Monday and these evening concerts on the Wednesday and Thursday, it is for us to broaden the offering so it feels more inclusive to the
You're
community.
You've got
to
make money from
no,
that.
No, they've been very public spirited, it's okay.
Oh, of course, it's a charity, isn't it?
No, you're right. We make more money and we pay more money.
Yeah, but
and
you're not
telling
us, you know,
there's that side of things as well.
We're going around in circles.
From what we understand, there was an ambition to do 2 weekends last year,
yes,
and have 2 weekends of shows. Which would have allowed them to do the same thing, but this year we felt that it would reduce the impact to you guys by trying to consolidate it around one weekend.
No.
So the extra shows that we entertained on the second weekend last year, we're now trying to build around the one weekend to reduce our tenure in the park. I can see there's lots of head shaking here.
Yeah, because,
and
I mean, 8,000 people go, and I think quite a few of them come from neighbouring, you know, come from outside, okay? But there are many more thousands of people who live, particularly in these roads and streets.
This is a residential area.
It's not, you know, you're not in the middle of a great big park somewhere where there's, like, you know, a mile around you and stuff. You're right on the road,
well,
and opposite, there's roads full of people, flats and houses.
You can all
people.
Hear it.
And you know, you want them to have that disruption of music, noise, for 6 days straight. That would drive me nuts.
I mean, if this was something like Live Aid, we wouldn't be sitting here, would we? You know, that was, you know, it was all for charity, all for a good cause. And we'd put up with it. But...
And that was
why?
One off, and that was a one
off. Well, I'll tell you why.
You're not a favour. That's what it is.
I'll tell you why, and I'll tell you why I find your answer a bit dubious to me. I'm a shareholder in various companies, and you're a company with shareholders. That's the reason you're trying to stretch it. You've paid all this money to build up, you've paid all the money to take it down again. You're going to stretch out and wring out as much as you can from this event, so you're screwing more and more days on it to get more and more return. That's the real reason. It's because I saw it last year when it was stretched out, and it was fairly, I will actually say, it was quite thin at times. There was only like peak times when you're wringing the last bit of money out, the last bit of people coming out. It's not viable. If it was a weekend event plus the children's event on the Monday, you'd probably have big crowds and it would go down well, and that would be the end of it. But you rung it out, and plus the extra for the build up, 21 days. It's just not on. It's not on.
And you're right about the lack of viability. That's why they had to sell extra shares. And I mean, I've got charity at the show.
Yeah,
it doesn't
yeah.
make that much profit actually. As its existing format.
Yeah.
So
you are right that the extra days help spread our production costs, which are going up a lot with everything across more show days. So there's definitely a financial motivation for us.
Be honest with us about
it's
that.
It's purely for your company's benefit. I can't believe it's for the benefit of the people who are going.
And
there's certainly
not
people for the benefit of the people who are living
here. Because we have to do you an enormous favour.
So rather than
an enormous favour, but all that period, you know, we let you, in a way, we let you play loud music in our gardens, because that's what it amounts to, and I wouldn't let anyone else do that, so why should I like
you
doing it?
And actually, you know, in some ways, two weekends makes more sense, because at least it's still disruption, but you know, there's a break between the two lots of days. People go to work, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and the kids going to school. Kids have to go to bed early because they've got school the next day. So I don't think you're kind of quite sort of, you know, considering the sort of, particularly the midweek impact of, you know, having sort of late night concerts. It's just, you know, I would suggest
this resolves the problem of the footfall,
yeah,
because that
true.
Heavy equipment is sitting there
for the
yeah. same time. I'd quite like to go back to a couple of things. In your information you said it was 12% of the
yeah.
area. In fact, I think you were saying 12% of the common and the park. It is actually about 25% of the park
That's
that would
right.
be unusable.
Yeah.
So you've kind of...
And even the bits that
I'd
are
like
usable,
to also
add,
all this arises
pleasant.
Because Southwark Council actually gave Gala a premises licence. A premises licence is a sale of alcohol. For some reason, best known to themselves, and Pat, the Dunnett Society and myself went to that meeting, they gave Gala permission to hold a six-day event. And that's why we are in this situation. Right, to your councillors, where are they? Who knows?
Yeah, our councillor is
I mean, that's why we are now in that situation, because, I mean, the events licence is different, I'm right, aren't I?
Yeah.
That is for the use of the site.
Yeah.
The premises licence, they have that to hold 6 days over the year. It's not six days in a 10-day period, it is 6 days over a year. And that was a fault also in your information.
If we moved on to discussion, I suppose, to, you know, I'd say we have to face the way the world is, the way the world is, as it is, rather than the way we might necessarily want it to be. And of course, you know, Gala are operating for profit. Of course they are. That's the way the world is, you know, and in that sense, you always, you know, of course they're going to want to make more money.
There's five people with hands up and nobody's been asked to say anything yet. We're running out of time here. Please could you give one of us a chance? Thank you.
Well, we're not even aware of you there, unfortunately.
No,
if you could be
on the screen.
Shall we just, we'll just take this last question in the room and then we'll go through the five hands up and the call. Apologies for missing you.
I think that the real issue for me is, and it comes down in some ways to people who are not in the room, which is political accountability. Because in some ways, there are, you know, I'm not denying any of the problems that people have raised. But the difficulty I have is I fail to see the benefit for those people who are not attending. What is it that Southwark manages to fund with what they've made from Gala? I'm not asking you, you know, because you don't know. But what is it that Southwark manages to fund which benefits the whole of the community, you know, the people who live locally, which would not be funded were it not for the money that they generate from having a contract with Gala.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way the world is. That is, you know, I'm not blaming Gala for this. You know, I understand commercial sensitivity, but we don't see the benefit, you know. It is a reality that we've had 13 years or longer of cuts to local government funding, and there are big holes which have to be plugged somehow, but we don't know how. We don't know what's happening. You know, we don't see. I'm not saying there isn't a benefit. We don't see it.
Okay, we're just going to take some calls from the virtual meeting.
Turn your camera on and make sure we address people with their name.
Yes, it's absolutely the case that commercial events are being held to raise income for the council. So the income we get, there's two sides to it. So there's a slight higher fee And the site hire fee goes towards offsetting the running costs of the event service, and it also offsetting the costs of running the event service.
Your costs of running the event service.
Yes, but also to fund, to continue being able to fund free events program, which is the Cultural Celebrations Fund. And then there's a levy charge, which is called an environmental impact fee. And that is in addition to the site hire fee. That's ring fenced for projects in the park, for enhancement projects in the park.
Well, we don't think the park gets very much. Would you like to tell us how much money we spend on the park?
So I cannot tell you.
We know it's very.
I can't comment on how on commercial fees because it is commercially sensitive. Like we're dealing with lots of commercial event operators. All fees are by negotiation. And we don't
want free events can we have around here. I haven't noticed any.
I think we need to go to those online now. Philip and Jenny Mitchell, you have a question with your hand up first.
Firstly, you said earlier, I think, that the noise levels last year were not breached, the recommendations or requirements were not breached. To be clear, that isn't true. It may be true according to some monitoring that you have, but we live next to one of the monitoring sites from last year, and on a number of occasions when we reported the noise levels, people came out, monitored it, and as a result, the noise was reduced. So across the period, it may well be that noise levels were not breached, but certainly there were occasions on which they were.
Philip, sorry if there was any ambiguity there. The music noise limits are set on 15-minute windows of cumulative noise exposure because that's what's practicable for setting these noise limits for outdoor events, and that's the same for any local authority in any park across the country, any similar venue, whether that's indoor or outdoor, and would include all of anything like Hyde Park or Concert CO2 or here. So there may be transient breaches, which we would like our noise management team to be able to respond to, and it's important to us that they can go to addresses, collect additional data, and enhance the control on site. But yes, you're correct. In terms of absolute decibel levels, there may be occasional transient breaches, but we know that we have the data support that we were compliant with our music noise limits set out within the license, which are on 15-minute windows.
Well, just to be clear, transient breaches does not mean, in this case, simple spikes. We're talking about extended periods of breach that were corrected when we complained.
And we had a rolling number of people who were ringing up to say, it's still too loud.
By the way, I should say one thing positive for me, that your people were very responsive. I was impressed by the reaction of your staff last year.
Yes.
It's the noise I'm complaining about, not the staff.
But the actual noise level is so great that even a very solidly built 1930s house was shaking. We were unable to use our garden. We were unable to use the front part of our house at all. We had all the blinds, all the curtains closed, earplugs in, and it was still enough to make me feel that I was going completely mad. We had to go out and away from the area. And you can't expect people to do that for days on end.
Yes.
It's totally, totally unacceptable to be shoved out of your own house by some event that's in the park. And I think that the way the speakers are set means that a lot of the speakers' noise is coming directly onto the housing in the area and not towards the centre of the park. I find this completely bizarre that you have a large area of park and yet you place all your stages right on the edge, right by the road, right by the houses. Mm-hmm. It does not make any sense to me whatsoever. I will say that the people running it were extremely nice, but it couldn't be dealt with. It was absolutely horrendous. Thank you.
So since you said that you're funding all sorts of excess costs, we thought you might fund miles for going away for a week. Because really, that is what it means. It's not just inconvenient. We are more or less obliged to go away. and that's not acceptable.
Okay, thank you, Jenny. I think there's a few things to note there. One is dissatisfaction with how the music noise limits are set out. One is configuration of the stages and properties they face. Is your property towards the south end of the park?
The south, west end.
We're opposite the big...
Piemont Green.
Okay.
Yeah, we're opposite the big stage.
Sure, that's...
And that stage faces...
That's noted. It's my first year involved in the event, but we've had similar challenges before, and we can look at the orientation of some of the venues. And
hey, there's a lot of people come and enjoy themselves, right? We all like the idea of that, and we know that we're fortunate to live near a pleasant area, which is not true of everyone, and that's all great. But last year, you got a very negative reaction to there being 3 days. A reasonably negative reaction to that, and a very negative reaction when the applicant put in to increase to, I think it was 5 at the time. And now you're proposing not only 5, but 6, which wasn't in the written application that we got, but has been added since. And that, to me, is completely unacceptable. We'll tolerate 3, I'm sure, but not 6.
Yeah, and we have written to you, so you can look at all our points in
thank
the email.
You.
But thank you. No, it's not our turn anymore. Thank you.
Thank you for speaking up. So, Patsy Bramble, next caller on the line.
Yes, thank you. Can you confirm you can hear me?
Yes, we can hear you fine, yeah.
Thank you for that. My concerns are slightly more on a different tack, and those are regarding the financials of Assemble Gala and another company which is apparently taking part in this event, whose name I've lost, Method Events. Who exactly is the guiding hand behind this event? What does Method Events do? It has it's filed only micro accounts, we know nothing about it. What's its financial viability? The same goes for Assemble Gala too. They don't file full accounts at all. I noticed that the shareholders' funds are there, so the shareholders pump plenty of money in, which of course the shareholders could take out. There has been one instance recently in Southwark where a large event, this year, the organiser went bust, leaving a debt to Southwark Council of £140,000. I'm slightly nervous about having other large events where we don't know the financials concerned, nor do I know on what basis and at what times the promoter, I assume it's Assemble Gala, pays the amounts of the events fees, at what time. Who actually is responsible for doing all that? Is that events, Assemble Gala's liability?
So in terms of the two companies...
I've got more supplementaries as well, but that's the main one.
Sure. In terms of the two companies, Method Events Limited is my business with my business partner James sat to the right of me. We're the only two shareholders, we're the only two company directors. We only file micro-entity accounts because fundamentally that's less administration than filing more extended accounts. We're not looking for an exit plan. We're not looking to make a public offering anytime soon, so there's not really any need for us to report anything more. But happy to speak candidly about how our business functions anytime that that anyone has any queries. As a company that specialises in operational support for outdoor events, we're fairly proud to have made it through COVID when business activity was pretty limited. So I'd like to think that viability-wise, we'll certainly be able to make it through to this event in May. Assembled Gala Limited is the promoter. The promoters sell the tickets and book the artists. They take the risk on the event. And as was noted by another stakeholder here earlier, they do have funding from Addition Capital. And a lot of the reason for that is to enable cash flow, which is quite challenging for this sort of outdoor event now with the supply side inflation that we've seen in the past few years and the restriction in general supply chain availability and contractors since COVID. Was there anything else there on the structure of the two companies?
Well, in terms of it's Assemble Gala who applied for or had their license, the premises license assigned to them last year. Originally, I think it was We Are the Fair had the license. As stakeholders, we have no say over that. It's entirely up to the license holder to assign to whoever he wants, and that could well happen again this year, which would cause me a great deal of grief if that did happen. Can we go back to the structure of the timing of the payments and when actually Assemble Gala had to put their hand in their pocket and put money on the table to come to Southwark Council? At what point did they pay the various stages of the fees?
So I can answer that. Hi, Patsy. So, to date...
Can you hear, Patsy?
Can you hear me?
No, can't. Sorry.
So
it's very difficult to hear our point of view.
So there is the payment stages for this event are, it's 20% deposit on the total site hire fee at the point of in-principle agreement, and that is before we start progressing the application that they've made. It's a further 30% deposit on the site hire fee 6 months out from the first day on site. So to date, effectively...
Site hire fee, do you call it, is that the combination of not just the first day event, the supplementary days, and also the rig and de-rig days?
That's everything, yeah. That's the total...
So it's 20% of the total fee?
The total fees due for... And the EIF, the levy charge on that is added into that as
well. That goes in as well,
so to date, effectively, Assemble Gala have paid 50% of the total fee. That is refundable, obviously, because it's we're all subject to license still. That amount is refundable if they don't get issued a license due to the council not granting permission. It is not refundable if they withdraw the application from this point on, or if they cancel the event. The balance,
is that the norm? Because if you look at the actual fees, the chart in your events, what is that actually called, you list how much is payable, either a percentage for small events, but for large and major events, you don't actually say what those percentages are.
No, it's all commercially sensitive, but large...
commercially sensitive means you don't want to tell anybody. It's not very sensitive.
Well, I can't make...
You shouldn't. There's no competitor for this event.
But I can't... I cannot make that information public, I guess. We are dealing with lots of commercial operators, so it's for competition.
Okay, but what you're saying is 50% of the total site hire fee is payable before the events licence is actually granted. And if the events licence is not granted, then that is refundable.
Yes.
But not if Assemble Gala pull out.
Yep, so it's non-refundable if...
Okay, that's very helpful, thank you. There was another company which is more back to the Assemble Gala people. I noticed another name crept into the hand up beforehand. What's Assemble Live Limited? That was in another item marked Family Day. Assemble Live Limited doesn't exist as a company.
It's a Southwark Council mistake, I think.
The Assembled Live is our what we trade as. Assembled Gala Limited is the company.
It's not a limited company. Don't mislead people by calling these limited companies when they're not.
That was information that came from us. That is a mix up between Assembled Gala Limited and Assembled Live. There shouldn't have been a limited on the end, or it should have been Assembled Gala Limited.
It's just a typo on the letter.
All of our previous agreements with Gala have been with Assembled Gala Limited.
Sorry, very hard to hear, sorry.
So I think that words to the effect of that there's a typo on the letter. It should say Assembled Gala Limited on the letter.
I'll forgive you.
Should we move on to next?
No more for now. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Thank you.
While Pax is there, Patsy, you're still there.
She can't hear you.
I'd like to know, I got rather confused, who was actually awarded the premises licence?
The premises licence is now held by Assembled Gala
Limited.
Yeah, but
at that meeting in the spring, who was awarded the premises licence?
Assembled Gala.
Method, who was it?
Assembled Gala Limited, who were the promoter of the event.
Is that right?
There's
Patsy?
No intermediary.
It was assigned to Assembled Gala, I think in June, or May or June, I have a date here somewhere.
The new premises licence that we applied for this year prior to the 2023 event was in Assembled Gala's name, which is us, the promoter, who have
that
run the event.
Gala.
That's right, yeah. Should we go to Joanne?
Hi there, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you.
OK,
Thanks very much for letting me speak. I appreciate, you know, the time's ticking. I think a lot of the things that have come with the gala progression over the years has developed in a positive way in terms of what has been communicated and what is actually available in terms of phoning up regarding noise or speaking to people on site, which in the early days, and I know this has changed hands slightly, but we were very, I think it was very badly handled in the first couple of years for residents. And so from my perspective, it does make it more difficult to trust what is being said. But mainly I'm thinking about the high density of people who don't have any kind of garden, and particularly for children, because the event runs over, your sort of event is over the half term weekend and then the whole of the half term holiday afterwards. And I've tried to use the rest of the park that isn't being cordoned off. And as I think somebody else has previously said, it is nothing like a park. I mean, not only do you have all of the dog walkers condensed and obviously any kind of the things that are left with that, with the children, the noise is just still completely, you can't use that park. So I appreciate what you're saying about in terms of nature and noise levels, but in terms of actual residents who don't have outside space, who are trying to use the space for children, we don't have that ability. And I've resigned myself to that in a certain respect. But then afterwards, when it comes up, like they're saying, the ground is so compacted. We've had like situations where, you know, the grass is so sharp, the kids have cut their hands, the ground is so bad, the welts are left there the whole year across the main lawn. Yeah. I think it's just the general idea that there's enough space in this part of East Dulwich that we can put on something of this scale, and now it's being scaled up to this degree. And I'm just wondering how this kind of event is going to be viewed, because you're obviously in now and now you're expanding it. Where is this going to go? Because this, I think, as it's been made very clear, we've all got different viewpoints on ages and how we can get to this event. But for the children who are living locally, and they certainly can't go away, and we have an awful lot of them, and obviously Southwark is the highest tenancy housing provider of any local council, we have an awfully high proportion of residents. They don't have other outside spaces that they can easily get to. They're not even being accompanied by adults a lot of the time. So what are we supposed to do with the children who are not then able to go to the park and use the space? It's already a football pitch for the schools, for the Harris.
Yeah, it's a very fair question, and you've phrased that very eloquently. It's tough, this, because we, you know, there's obviously people in this room and on the call that are impacted by this event and are never going to want the park used in this way for live music events. The hope is, and the reason we've applied for this license from the council, is that there is another side to the argument, that there are people that enjoy this type of entertainment on their doorstep, that like outdoor events during the summer months, and the, you know, working with the local community, with local businesses, that there's a net you know, benefit of having music in a green space in London, and that's, you know, that's what we have to hold on to when we're in this.
But there are bigger parks,
you're extending it to 6 days.
Yeah.
Not
three.
And there are bigger spaces
elsewhere that aren't sort of surrounded by dense residential.
All what you say may be okay. So we're going to have, well, let me get this right. On Saturday and Sunday, it's going to be techno.
No, so on the Friday, Friday of Gala will be a big mix of things like R&B, jazz, and piano, house, disco, B&B, big mix.
Saturday
will be predominantly house, disco, and some techno, and then Sunday would be predominantly house and disco and some techno.
Yeah. So 3 days for house work, you know.
And that's the gala weekend.
And then on the Monday.
So the Wednesday and Thursday before then would be live concert shows. So for example, one headliner performing an hour and a half set in the evening. So
that's it.
So Wednesday, Thursday, site opens at 5, closes at 10 p.m., 10:30.
Yeah.
During that period of 5 p.m. to 10:30, there will be one show from a headliner, which is about usually an hour and a half, live music, not DJ, and then maybe a warm up as well.
So you come home from work, you've done a long day, maybe you've been a nurse and you've done like a double shift.
I'll come on to the Monday as well.
Yeah. I think
and then you have to wait till 10:30, and you're probably annoyed
by the time you do go to bed. It, I mean, come on, guys.
It's just too much. I mean, you're stretching it too much. It's too many days. It's too many days. If you is, well, if it was the, if it was the weekend and the Monday's the bank holiday, isn't it? If it was the Monday, you had Saturday and Sunday, you had your techno and house and all that other stuff that I'm not particularly an expert on, but.
Or a fan.
No, can I go away that weekend so that people can enjoy that? I already do that sacrifice.
Yeah.
And I say, okay, it's one weekend of the year, fine, you know, that's fine.
So they still need to go to bed. They're still going to school on the Thursday and Friday,
yeah.
And it literally,
yeah.
You're very good at turning it off at 10:30. But up until 10:30, it is absolutely unbelievable. And even when you phone up, you speak to very nice people. It's echoing down our street. My neighbours on the other side are literally having it bashed in their back windows. You little kids are not sleeping, and like you say, it's even with the windows closed, everything sealed. It's just too late on a weekday. It's one thing over a weekend. I'm sorry, it's one thing telling kids you can't go to the park, and you, when you try and go, it's all everyone's condensed into a tiny area. It's another thing that you've come home, done bath time, bedtime stories, and then it's still at 10 o'clock, it's pounding your windows in and the kids aren't going to sleep. It drives me bonkers. And that's just me, and I'm not in the worst situation.
That really is true.
That is
how we live.
You have no idea the other side of the park we live and we can hear it.
I mean, why is it necessary these days, you know, kilowatt audio amplifiers, or probably 10 kilowatt audio amplifiers in a place like that? Why is it necessary to have it quite that loud?
It's not Glastonbury. It's
yeah,
not.
It's very.
You know, you're not trying to reach people half a mile away.
It's a very subjective thing, so...
I know people like it now,
it's a small
but, you know, this
and
is
And you're wanting
ridiculous.
To run a week-long festival, and you're hearing people are complaining about the noise. Even me, who, you know, I don't mind a weekend, you know, and I can go away, and I can, you know, that's the trade-off. But now you're saying 6 days, that will drive me nuts. And trust me, when I'm nuts, I'll lead a whole campaign, and there'll be a massive petition, and you won't be coming back. I mean, that's, you know, that's what you're risking.
Your mitigation of, oh, we use local companies. Oh, we pay for the police. We pay for the cleanup. You don't really have any empathy for the people that live here. And one of the people that used to be part of We Are the Fair Gala, Lisa Bowden, I think her name was,
She works for Edition Capital.
Who actually does work for Edition Capital. She said she was a local. I don't know if any of you are. Whether you are or not, empathy isn't a strong word here. This is a residential area, and it's a terrible thing that you're doing. And you cannot seriously expect us to say, oh, but they're using local companies. Oh, all right, bring on the noise. Impact all the ground. And disrupt people's lives. It's okay. They're using local companies. Not enough. You have no empathy, and you don't give a damn about us.
That's very difficult to hear. And
what do you mean it's difficult? You're surprised by
you know.
What I've just said?
No. It's just obviously this is a hard part of what we do. What we, you know, we really need to try or find the way to coexist, and what we
turn it down.
What we can
try
do,
that one.
What we can do, is try and be good neighbours. So that's why we have this forum here, where you're rightly voicing your opinions, and we need to hear that. We need to address things like poor ground reinstatement that you experienced last year, and line bikes being a pain, and noise management being inadequate. Like, we have to hear these points, we have to adjust our plans to try and better address them so we can be better neighbours to you guys, and then if we're lucky enough to get a licence to put our show on in your park.
But that's only for 3 days. You're doubling the amount of time.
You're wanting 6 days before you've even fixed all of the other problems that people are raising from the 3 days.
I'll come back.
If you wanted to coexist, the easiest way for you to coexist, real simple, it's not do it.
I think, in fairness, to come back to what I was saying before, some of it, I understand that there are things like commercial sensitivity. That said, in my experience, the requirement for commercial sensitivity is one that generally comes from your side. I understand it, you know, in as much as you have an interest in not broadcasting to potential competitors what you are paying out. I understand that, yeah? But, you know, there's a reality here, and I think we have to be honest about it. You know, some of that stuff that has been talked about is difficult for you to hear. We have to be honest and say there are competing interests. You know, people are never going to be entirely happy. People with young kids are never going to be entirely happy if the kids are still being kept up at 10, 10:30. People who can't use the car are not going to be happy. You have to face that. That's the reality. Okay? But there is a potential for compromise. And that arises from what people see in terms of what they get back. I'll be honest, I'm not as impacted as some people. I live up at Memorial Road. The noise doesn't travel as far. Yeah? I'll be honest about it. But that said, I think that you would do better if people were able to see what it is that they were getting back by way of a return.
I think your point is a very good one.
Yeah, in as much as
the call for more transparency.
Exactly, and I think that, you know, and I think that it is within your power, potentially, to say to some council, actually, we are quite happy to publicise what we are paying the council. And that would allow people like us to actually then put some political pressure on the council to say, well, actually, how is this money being spent? What are residents getting back for it? Because in those circumstances, you can see what it is you're sacrificing. You can see what you get. What, you know, some people who live locally are not going to get anything out of those 3 days. There are people who will. You know, there are younger people who will, who would like to go. And, you know, you get a lot of older people here. You know, unfortunately, that's the way things are. Younger people don't tend to be involved with these consultations, but there are younger people who live here and will attend it and will enjoy it. But a lot, you know, older people are not going to see what they are immediately getting back. They have a chance to, though, if they know what Southwark Council is being paid, and they can then turn to Southwark Council, not necessarily the officers, but the councillors, and say, "Well, actually, what are you doing with this money? You know, we need this." And
what
we
councillors? Where are they?
Well, people then have got the ammunition to do that. You know, people have then got the ammunition to say, well, actually, you know, what are you doing with that? You know, and there can be, but anyway, I'll leave it there.
I think more transparency on both sides would be beneficial. We need to take a question from Liz P, who's online, but she's had her hand up for a long time now. Well, I think there's a question from a new entrant at the back of the room as well. Liz,
we'll go online first because she's been waiting a while. Liz?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. My questions relate to a couple of the issues that have already been raised. First of all, is the level of distress and disturbance caused to local residents. My question is, what level of disturbance and distress are you happy to cause to still go ahead with this? And at what level of distress will you actually say, actually, we may need to rethink this? I mean, for example, you know, if you heard people were calling the Samaritans or being taken to hospital, mental health hospitals, or even killed themselves. Would that make you think again? I mean, it's a serious question. People are hugely distressed and disturbed by this event. And you say it's hard for you to hear that, but you need to hear that. And you need to tell us what level of distress you're happy to cause residents to make the money you're making. That's the first point. And related to that, what level of damage to the park and disruption to people who want to use the park are you happy to do, would anything stop you? I mean, you know, really, would anything stop you? Given you're there to make money, what would stop you going ahead or trying to increase the event if you possibly can? I'd like a direct answer to that.
Okay, Liz, I think I understand the sentiment behind your question. I'm going to try and give you a direct answer, but I don't think there's an easy one there. Which is, in terms of level of disturbance that would be acceptable,
we're regulated by the Licensing Act, and in being awarded the license, our client here, Ascendable Gala, their business is enabled. Clearly there was a process behind that, and there were decisions within the licensing authority, which here sits within the local authority, to enable that premises license and ultimately enables this disturbance. My client here, Gala, are always going to operate towards the limits that are set out for them, and I would be
surprised. So you're saying it's not your fault?
I think the accountability is still with Gala as a business, but it's.
But you may operate within the rules, although we've heard that that the rules on noise were broken a number of times. But you know, the rules don't necessarily reflect the level of distress that either children, people with fat families with children, or people who can't enjoy their own house and garden for that period. What do you think is reasonable? What distress do you think you're happy to cause to make the money you're making?
I think unless Gala have a different answer to that, then I think that we believed that we would maintain the belief that the Licensing Act is applied proportionately, and there is a sensible premises license applied to this festival by a sensible London borough with good governance, and that's what
that's awful. She's asking you a question
about the distress.
You can
answer it.
I'm sure I could ask plenty of very difficult questions. Not everyone in this room would be able to answer.
You're passing the buck. You're saying, well, you know what? I don't have to answer that question because the local authority will answer that question when they decide whether to give us the license or not. That's what you're saying. There's no
metric for disturbance. To be fair, to the answer to this question, it's difficult. It's not necessarily a quantitative question. It's going to have a quantitative answer.
But you're the ones that have applied to double the length of this festival.
Yeah.
That's why we're all here. You're having to justify that application, and you're hearing from people lots of very good reasons why you might need to rethink that application. So what she's asking you is, you know, what is your justification for doubling the length of the event, and for the what amount of, you know, how long would the event have to be before you'd actually say, do you know what, I think they've all got a point. Yeah, they've got kids, and some of them work all day, and they just want to come home and relax. They can't open their windows, and they can't get in. Because 6 days, obviously, you've not actually sat down and thought, at any point, a 6-day application, you know, that might be a little bit too much for local residents. We're telling you it's too much, and you're being asked what would be too much then, because
Within the scope of this consultation, feedback needs to be listened to, ascertained, and the management plans for the festival potentially need to be adjusted, and that is the point of this consultation. It's a difficult qualitative question to answer, and so I don't think I'll be able to give an answer that's going to satisfy anyone in this room. But well, I understand, but I am here, honestly, to take on this feedback within the scope that we're doing.
Just say that. I'm going to take on the feedback.
Yeah.
We'll have to think about some things.
Absolutely.
Don't sit there and say, well, actually, it won't be our decision. It'll be the local authority's decision. Whatever they decide is the right decision.
Don't worry, we'll be going after them too.
Okay,
understood.
Yeah.
I was trying to answer the question with anything quantitative that I could grasp onto, but ultimately we're here to listen to feedback, not to answer those sorts of questions. And everyone's feedback's noted, the same with the representations that have been made and written in the consultation so far.
And it is really good that you're doing this consultation. I really do appreciate it. Even like to have this opportunity is really, really good. And I really appreciate hearing all of this and you guys being here.
Thank you, Jan. I think, Liz, there was a second part to your question.
Compensation to local residents for disruption and distress.
Sorry, could you say again, please?
Would you consider paying compensation to residents for disruption and distress?
We can't afford it.
Yes or no?
It's not something that we would be able to provide. We do...
it's no, then. Okay, thanks.
Yes or no? Yeah.
That was on my list of questions as well, so you've answered it. No.
There was a question at the back there.
I just wanted to flag a concern that since the size of the festival has been doubled, I'm hearing, well, you know, we can cope with one, but two is too much. And I just want to flag that for a lot of people, one is too much.
It's too
and
much.
I don't want the conversation moving too far that way. Like, you're doubling it. Well, one was okay, one wasn't okay.
Yeah.
For a lot of people who live in a residential area with a narrow park. This isn't Clapham. This is a narrow park, really. So I just wanted to flag that.
Thank you.
Okay, that's one that's noted. Yes, sorry.
Yeah, I want to speak up for the wildlife. And I have done since before the festival ever started. Not just the birds. Liz has made a very good point about the compaction of the ground with all that footfall. Yes, you are riding roughshod over all the ground there and compacting it so that the birds can't forage there properly. But and other people have made the point about the excessive noise in the rest of the park. You go, I've been in the little Sexby garden whilst the festival's been on, and the noise is extremely loud in there. I mean, any birds that are around, well, we've noticed it, haven't we? Before the festival ever started, you'd walk through that path. I did the week before the first festival. There were blackbirds nesting, and they were running across the path, the entrance path, the main one that all your customers go in near Forest Hill Road. And there were thrushes at the other end. They were nesting as well. And that's just the right at that far end of the barrier now. And there were green woodpeckers, wasn't it? In the trees, and they were nesting. Well, the trees have been felled by Southwark Council. Whether that's anything to do with the festival or not makes it easier for you that there aren't any woodpeckers nesting there anymore.
Well, there won't be anyway, because they rely on anthills, which
yes.
are going to obviously be completely flattened by
yes,
your
50,000. That's right. The,
there's no chance of them coming back. That's where they get their food from.
Yes, I mean.
Oh.
So you are actually contributing. Yes.
Well done.
To
yes.
The
disappearance of the green woodpeckers in Peckham.
Yes, and the noise. You know that ecology report, ecological. I wrote to you. You wrote back to me about it, Ben. The ecological report last year said that you should mitigate the noise going to the surrounding area, which was a good nesting area for birds. You said that you've done the site itself, the ecological report, and there are no nesting birds there, not surprisingly, but around the perimeter of this good nesting area, they said to restrict the noise, and I've asked you what you have done to restrict the noise. I know two things that you did originally, which was move in response to an original survey, was to move the fencing back a little bit so you were a little bit further away, but it wasn't much, it was only a foot or two, I think. And also now you have made the fences a bit higher. I don't know if that's, I don't think that was really for the same purpose, but you know, I don't really know how you can mitigate. I'd like to hear how you can mitigate against having an event like that with ferocious noise in the middle of the bird nesting season. I don't really know what you can do. What can you do, is what I'd like to know, to try and put right the damage that you have caused.
Yeah, well, I guess I'll quickly respond to that. Two things that we proposed to set out this year, which would be additional surveys to find out more from ecological consultants about impact. Well, as in addition to what we had previously had.
We never see them either, the surveys.
We do send them out on our stakeholder links, and if your email's on there, we can be sure to send out this survey after this event. So one thing would be to increase the surveys that we would do, and then the other aspect of it would be the funds that we proposed to provide to stakeholders for investments into the park, which could be biodiversity related.
Sorry, I didn't get that.
It's what we spoke about at the last meeting, additional funds that we would provide.
Yeah, a little bit around. More than just bird boxes, one hopes.
Yes, it would be.
If your survey came back and said this is a completely inappropriate place, would you not run the event?
what if they said the whole site is just not appropriate for any kind of event? I don't know, probably not.
Say that louder.
I said probably not.
Probably not.
Wow.
I mean, just thinking about this for a second, I mean, particularly in terms of the impact on nature, while it might not be ideal, is there a particular reason why, given that the whole thing has to be fenced in, you know, you've got the hoarding around the whole thing anyway, is there a particular reason why it can't be held on the common? Where there are
common land, you'd have to go through your Secretary of State, and there'd be no sound buffer. You'd have noise both sides,
and the
damage caused to the common, which is naturally wet, would stop local people using it for months. We've been down this road, and basically, no site is suitable. In a nutshell, is it?
But would it be as bad?
it would be worse, because you've got no sound buffer either side.
Sorry, but why is that okay in Burgess Park, then, for example, when they kind of blocked that off most of last summer?
And they're the same to Burgess Park.
No, I'm there. Really. It's basically the exact same kind of area, kind of housing.
It's a bigger park.
It's bigger, but when they do the kind of...
It's much bigger.
In the middle, yeah, it's got the same issue.
It's a far bigger park than Peckham. The common, actually, if you put Gala onto the common, it would extend right across and right on top, right across both sides. So you have noise east and west. Yeah.
So a park like that is more suited to a festival, whereas this park is not particularly suited to
I don't think any park is suitable, to be quite honest. I think, the issue with the common is that it would have to go further than just the council, because it's common land.
Can you tell me why you left Brockwell Park? You were there 2 years running, weren't you?
Did you leave, or were you asked to leave?
Or did someone else approach you? How did that come to an end?
It was, I believe, a bigger promoter, or another promoter came in with a different proposal, which subsequently meant that we could not be in the park anymore.
So then what did you do?
They got active.
Did you go looking around for another venue, or were you approached by Southwark?
We were working with we are the Fair, who some of you may know from previous meetings, and we I believe I was working with Gala at the time, but I believe that there was a search amongst London parks to rehouse Gala, and the Peckham Rye Park was explored, an event up, and the same consultation and premises license process was undertaken, and that's how we ended up in Beckham Rye Park.
So the other promoter put there was another event put on by this other promoter.
No, so it was the same. It was the same. Sorry if this is a little bit confusing. The production company who used to help us with production, which we've now taken in house, and this stakeholder process, which we've now taken in house, so that we can be here in the room with you and almost take out that middleman and make sure that we are, you know, listening to you direct, and that we're then actioning those things ourselves in house, because ultimately we are the event organizer. So we've taken all of that stuff in house, but that they previously they did more of that work for us. It was outsourced to them, and they assisted us with licensing process, with production management of the park, with this stakeholder process, and council liaison and applications and things like that, which we're now doing amongst the team here.
Just to clarify, because I'm confused.
Sorry.
So you broke away from that promoter.
So we're the promoter. They were an outsourced production company.
So I just don't understand. You were holding it in Brockwell Park with a different promoter.
I'm just
trying to understand why the move came about because of a change of relationship.
There's a competing promoter moved into Brockwell Park. There
that's
are now nine much bigger shows than Gala
that's
in Brockwell Park.
It was a competing application which then ousted Gala, which is. And Gala has been the consistent the whole time.
Yeah, but, all right.
Can I just go back? I think you mentioned this earlier, but I've been confused. You're the promoter of this event. You put it on, you take the risk.
Yes.
If you don't sell enough tickets, for example.
Yes.
Okay, or the costs are higher than the ticket price.
Mm-hmm.
And you two guys have got a company that does. How does this link in?
We're consultants, effectively.
Consultants?
So, yeah.
You're not like booking agents or anything.
No,
like that,
so on no. some we don't take the risk in a show. We don't have a financial interest.
But you're
in the
basically
show.
Consultants.
Yeah.
They're an extension of our operations management event planning team, and they provide operational support, and they're helping us create our event management plans, and everything to do with health and safety and kind of making. We're working together to make sure that we're adhering to everything that we need to and that we're putting all the measures in place that we need to. And based on feedback from the SAG or from you guys, that we are putting measures in place, and these guys ultimately are the experts in that kind of field. So they'll be guiding us on making sure that we run a really well-delivered and high-quality event that's... run well and operationally well.
Question.
We're talking about noise pollution. We're not talking about air pollution. All the power that you need for your site is from diesel generators. We're told by everybody that diesel engines are not a very good thing for local air quality. Throughout build-up and breakdown, you stack lorries along the road across the park, which is directly beside the child's play area, beside the cafe. There are lorries sitting there all day with their engines running, waiting to get onto site. So you are producing a lot of local particulates, diesel engines. You haven't mentioned it, nobody else has mentioned it yet. I think you're probably choosing to ignore it because it's a difficult subject that you can't really justify. And to pick up on your point, you will never, ever be good neighbours. You've got to accept that.
It won't stop us trying.
Apparently not.
Except if you take up my suggestion.
Getting a different job. Understood.
Go to a bigger neighbourhood. That's the answer.
Go to a bigger neighbourhood.
Yeah.
So on the diesel, we will look in the mix. We have an engine idling policy in place, so that shouldn't be the case. I think the only for the last 2 years, that's what our contract has been running. So, but we'll make sure that we look into this in detail, such that there is no engine idling when it's unnecessary. I believe that the only points where it could be necessary for a short period of time, those vehicles are brought into site when it's on chilled goods.
Yes,
correct.
But they wouldn't be held outside
they
the site for as long.
Last year, there were lorries parked along Straker's Road all day, every day, with their engines running. As one went, another would come, and they would sit there with their engines running.
Okay, we will
big diesel engines have a problem with being stopped, getting cold, and then having to restart. So they leave them running.
And he knows what he's talking about, by the
way. You were producing a lot of pollution right beside a child's play area that's been created by Southwark Council to encourage people to take their children there. It's safe, that's where they should go. It's in the middle of the park.
Right.
It's not really very good, is it?
And by the way, Southwark Council have got a huge, cleaner, greener, safer approach to policy. So that's the first time I mean, I wouldn't have even thought of that, but that's something I think you have to sort of take back.
Can I just come in on that? So last year, is it okay to just respond to your question? We introduced an events environmental sustainability guide, and so all organisers, whether you know this as well, whether community events or medium-sized major events have to now complete this form, and it mentions all of these areas that you've referred to, because in line with the Southern Vision for 2030. So it really is a key issue, and the fact now that it's actually been brought into our events process, I think, demonstrates that. I have to say, though, Gala are, you know, pretty much well on top of sustainability issues as well, although I think what you're referring to last year, there was issues on the site on day one. There was a protester on the site on the day one, so when they were bringing their vehicles in, there was a gentleman on the site who was there, I think, for several hours, and the vehicles had nowhere to go. It's really important that they get the vehicles in on time, because that's what we require on a traffic management plan, which is really...
They still have the most efficient
route in, otherwise they'd have to come in from Holmstall Road, which would be ridiculous all the way through. But again, we're looking at that traffic management plan. But just to reiterate that, sustainability and engineering, it's a really key part of how we process events now, and everybody has to do it.
Yes, yeah, so we work very closely on these ESG checklists.
But you weren't aware of it last year?
Yes,
we've been working closely on this. Yes. We're one of the few.
It came in at the start of April, what was this year?
Yeah.
It was implemented. So we've got all of their data, all of the
emissions data,
carbon footprint calculations.
Which we've been producing voluntarily 2 years prior to that as well. I think take a bit of pride in the level of reporting that we produce year on year. Versus other larger festivals, I think in comparison to the level of reporting that they produce, we produce significantly more. There are not many festivals out there who've produced a net zero strategy with targets, and there are not many festivals who, you know, describe like the good and the bad things that happen publicly.
You've just turned a question about all this diesel emissions into how great we are at reporting. Are you going to be a politician one day? Is that your aim?
It's nice to be able to respond as well. But what I'm taking on board in here is that we need to look at the engine idling and make sure that doesn't happen.
Thank you.
Well, that's in practical terms, you know, I mean, because, you know, I appreciate that, perhaps it means having somebody walking up and down. Yeah, and saying, like, actually you need to turn the engine off, you know, because you can, you know, we all know, you can draw up a contract, you can draw up something, you know, but the actual engine driver, the person actually driving the lorry is the person who's going to decide whether the engine's turned off or not. Not what they've been told by their manager, not by what they've been told by the company. You know, if it suits them, they will sit there with the engine on. That's how you stop those things, not really by a policy. Or not by what's in the guide.
Yeah.
It's having somebody saying that engine needs to go off.
Completely agree.
It's something we can definitely feed back to even the traffic management staff who are going to be on site and greeting those vehicles.
It's extreme for my arm.
It's had it up for about half an hour. This is a really quick one. We've done the sort of 3 days to 6 days thing, which I think is not a bit of a joke, it just seems unusual. Is that usual for a festival to run 6 days in a row that you're in London, in any particular place, because I can't think of many.
And it, the well-being impact on local population.
Because I know they take over Burgess Park for like kind of little camps here and there, but I don't remember there being one which was 6 days. In the
I've researched, I can't find one.
So is this the new thing?
You can blame it on Southwark Council giving him a premises licence for 6 days.
They
gave them a premises, alcohol. They have
alcohol.
Patsy and I, Dalip Society, went to that meeting, complete farce, it was all in the bag. They gave them a premises licence for 6 days, and that's why we are here.
Okay, so they have a premises,
the events licence is separate.
I think you missed the beginning of the meeting.
Compared to other people, you know, that organise things in London, do they? There's other people waiting to come. There's definitely other London parks who are running multiple day shows, more than three.
Rockwell Park has about 10 events, and the residents are going completely round the bend.
I think it's quite common for events to run over two.
Yeah, during the summer. So, but I don't think I've ever seen one that's run like 6 to 5.
Yeah, so I think the whole thinking, because of the reaction that the 2 weekend proposals got earlier.
Yeah.
This year,
that's crazy, isn't it? It's
think,
like saying, like, I want this thing. Oh, you
yeah.
can't have it going back.
I mean,
it's
I think
longer.
This is just a creative, just to condense
it. It is a very creative.
I mean, effectively, it's only 2 extra days on site. We're on
site
for
19.
It's only 2 extra days. And the,
and
children not sleeping for those
hours.
The 2 weekends are long as well, so
we take Joanne's.
Yeah.
Joanne's
got her hand up, so we'll go to Joanne.
Thanks. I've just had a question from my neighbour who's really keen to understand why it's always that bank holiday over May. Is it that it's a bank holiday? Because obviously from the perspective of people suddenly really wanting to be outside again, it coincides very much with that experience of wanting to be outside. And obviously in an urban environment, we look to our parks, particularly us people who don't have gardens, that's where we go to get our nature fixes or our quiet time. So that time, that build up with the get in, and then obviously now the extended, because my piece of paper says that the site build is the 13th, but your slide said the 12th. So I think it must be the 12th. Is that the correct get in start date? The 12th of May? And then the get out on the 2nd. So that's over 21 days then of the part being not usable to the public as it would generally be. Why is it always that May bank holiday?
I guess it is ultimately a commercial choice that there's it's a long weekend, and that there's often a lot of events going on, and it allows us to, there's extra days of the weekend. I think ultimately that's the reason why it's the bank holiday.
August, so August wouldn't be an alternative, the bank holiday in August.
It wouldn't be a viable alternative for us due to other commitments.
Right, okay, thank you.
Is there anyone else with questions?
You said you had a net zero pollution policy. Could we see a copy of that?
Yeah, sure. So, do you want me to note down your email address? It's on our website. There's a section of sustainability where you've got
okay.
the last two reports
on there.
I can
find it on there.
Yeah.
Good.
Email address.
Good.
It's just for carbon dioxide equivalent emissions.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't have the nitrous oxide particulate matter pollutions, which come from the diesel engines, which I think will be more more something to include next year, because that is more that has more of a direct harmful impact on people, basically.
And
yeah.
How is the food cooked?
How is the
there's food cooking in there, isn't there?
Yes,
food
it runs with the same
generators,
the diesel generators power the entire site.
So they use generators?
No, it's one generator for multiple traders, so it's, they don't have individual generators, it's one like super silent kind of.
And then they have like barbecue griddles, or how do they do their cooking?
It varies from trader to trader, most of them run up electrics.
And then the generators, we introduced one solar hybrid generator last year, and we have as part of our strategy to purchase more biodiesel to reduce our overall footprint up to kind of like 2030 trajectory.
Yeah, with the hybrid generator last year, actually, because it's solar powered, and then charges the battery, and then that runs the power. And I think that it didn't even, and when the battery is run out, it kicks into the biodiesel. But I think for the first,
it can run for like a couple,
many days.
A couple. It can be on for a couple of weeks, whilst only using the actual engine for a very small period of time. So we like each year we're trying to just do slightly better. It's just improve all of these things. So. You know,
sure.
We're always going to have, I guess, some differences on some fundamental points, but all of these smaller things like really take
incredibly seriously to take action on.
So the generators will produce electricity for things like lighting, and for those people who cook with electricity, which I would guess is not so many, I would guess a load of them are using gas cylinders for cooking.
I'm not sure off the top of my head.
You know, they're the individual people have paid to come in and provide food.
Yeah.
So we can try and get some answers to
if you go down Brick Lane, you'll see them all down there and all running off gas. There's very few running off electricity except for lights.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess it would be a mixture, depending on the individual trader.
Question from Liz online.
Yes, we'll stay for this because this might be interesting.
Just to let people know, there is a petition on the Southwark Council website opposing the extension of the festival to the extra day. So if anybody is wanting to support that petition, please do go online and sign it. On Southwark don't usually listen to residents and local people, but they have in a few instances locally, particularly on the congestion charge, on the controlled parking charge, they had to back down on that. So maybe there is a chance they'll back down on this. But I mean, when will we know whether there's anything you've heard in this consultation process that will make you not want to extend the festival to the full 2 week that you're talking about?
So, can you hear me, Liz?
No, not me.
Come over.
So the consultation ends on the 8th of January. That's just been extended for a while, just to account for the holiday period. It will then take investors about a month to gather all of the feedback, collate all of the feedback, and talk to who we need to talk to produce the consultation findings report. So the report will get emailed to everyone who's taken part in the consultation. And it'll get emailed to all of those contacts on our stakeholder register as well. There'll then be a 2 week period, so like a second round of consultation, if you like, for people to comment on the report if they want to, or if they want to add any further comments. And then we'll get to a point where a decision will be made about whether to issue an event permit or not.
Last year I asked Southwark Council about the responses to the consultation. They told me that many more people had objected to the original festival plans than had actually approved them, yet nonetheless it went ahead. So I'm just interested to know how Southwark take account of the people who really do not want this event at all, and certainly do not want to extend it to 6 days, given that they called those views last year.
Yeah, so we got 194 responses earlier this year, and the decision is based obviously on around the feedback that we do get. The report will try, so we'll try to resolve any issues that people have brought up first and foremostly, and that will.
What kind of numbers would it have to be for actually? It's about 190 or something. Would it be like twice that?
So the decision is made by a senior council official, that will be in liaison with our cabinet member. It will be based on the feedback we get back.
So it's not actually the number of feedback that we're
I couldn't put a number on it, but it's also based on what the anticipated benefits of the event would be as well. So it's not just a decision based on feedback, it's a broad kind of look at it.
Struggle to get an idea of the anticipated benefits, but maybe
this is something that we haven't really gone into. Do you want to just talk through your community benefits?
Yeah, I don't want to sort of talk about it too much unless there's really... So we do publish in the report, if anyone would like to go into it, the kind of like the impact, so the numbers around what we bring. We've raised about 30k for Southwark Data for asylum seekers over the last few years. Our spending generates significant economic growth, around 2 million in terms of gross value added, about GDP. Every year we fund local arts projects with local youth charities, so Peckham Platform or South London Gallery, where we pay for them to have a workshop with an artist, and then the art is exhibited at gala, and then they can do with the art what they wish afterwards.
Are they aware that it's dirty money, effectively? Because it's against the local...
Best question
tonight. Well, I'm not sure I would call it dirty money.
This is very laudable, but the park, the benefit to the park comes bottom of the list.
Yep.
I guess I know. In the little bits of funding and activities we do, that was a gap that we saw, which is why we wanted to introduce that funding for a project for the park as well.
Why didn't you think of that at the very beginning? We're damaging the park. Let's put some money in because of
money that pays to the Environmental Impact Fund, and some of that will find its way. But then we heard feedback over the last 2 years that we're not seeing it, that we're not quite sure where this is going, which is why we've come to this decision to create an additional voluntary investment.
We've only just found out this year how little goes back into the park.
And I've also got to say, I hear this promotion all the time from corporate sponsors, and it doesn't matter that we are a corporate entity making a profit, because we put little bits of seed money here and there. The bottom line is that this festival exists because it gives you all jobs, and nothing wrong with that. Everybody has to work. I'm not criticizing that, but I always find it a bit disingenuous, when we ask what the benefits are, and we're given this, we put a little bit of money here and a little bit of money there, a little bit of money. It doesn't take away from the fact that, for this whole month of the year, the park, which is
our park,
just said, provides sort of an unending level of benefit to the people that use it all year round.
No, I would never present it as like this kind of like offsets anything. I guess this is, you have a view of galas about.
No, but my view is this: there's an investment company that raised £1 million from shareholders. You're not putting £1 million into local projects, nothing like it.
Yeah.
That's my point.
I guess, on the particular topic of Gala's structure, like what we can do is we can speak to the directors and provide a level of transparency that kind of like answers any sort of doubts that you have.
But you say that, but you can't tell us how much you give to the council, please.
I guess I'm not.
You're talking about transparency now, but we don't even know what the council get from, by the way.
I'm just offering to provide more information to you on the topic that you're interested in. I don't know what that would be, but I'm happy to have that conversation offline.
To be honest, I'm being a little bit unfair, because it's actually a conversation you can't win. You're being backed by a capital investment company,
mm-hmm.
and they're not in the business of charity. They're not.
On the investor, what I do know is that Gala is, with respect to other promoters, a relatively small company,
mm-hmm.
and that investment is what we need to run a business.
Yeah,
those
because,
investors.
Because your company actually isn't as viable as you think it is, which is what you
have
the team.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
I guess
very interesting.
I guess this is what I mean, but maybe sharing some more information with you would help, at least so that there was kind of like two sides.
In some ways, like, it's kind of part of the problem with sort of business versus sort of community as well, in that if you actually had allowed the local community to help plan the event, for example. Because what's happened is you come here, you want to extend to 6 days, double it, and there's nothing. I know it's really hard for you, and I can see by your faces this is like a really difficult experience. But there's nothing that any of you have said today which convinces me, and I can't speak for everybody else, but
no.
that 6 days is an acceptable way to go, or fair way to go. But that doesn't mean to say that there isn't a pathway forward for Gala to be a different festival, a bigger festival, whatever. It's just like now is not, and doing it this way is not the way to do it. I mean, you start off at the beginning of the evening by saying, well, we didn't do so well on some things. We've got a new company to come in and fix the damage. Well, I would say, and this is me being sensible, get the things right first that you haven't been getting so well, you know, so you get the feedback, you know, listen to all the feedback and think, well, how can we fix all of those things? Earn the trust of the local community over the next couple of years.
Bring the noise down.
You know, get those things fixed.
I've just had a really good idea. And then sign up disco, sign up festivals.
And then involve the local community in how you sort of like, decide sort of go forward. That, you know, that's how you win hearts and minds, I think.
Yeah.
I'm patenting that idea, by the way. Sign up festival. And then sign up discos.
Yeah, but you listen to Jimi Hendrix all day.
Well, true.
I've seen
her hand up just now.
Yeah,
she's back
again.
She's back here.
Wanting
to speak.
Patsy. Liz first.
Patsy's.
Oh, okay. Oh, you're on mute. Sorry, 2 seconds. Can you unmute yourself? Thank you.
Patsy, we can't hear her.
Mine's as much a question, but just to go back to the whole basis on which the 6-day licence was granted, that was the premises licence. And either Assembled Gala or their predecessor applied for a licence for 6 days. But there are only 4 grounds on which you can object to a licensing, a premises licence. And that is, unless the applicant can satisfy the council that the prevention of crime and disorder has been eliminated, public safety is fine, public nuisance doesn't happen, and children will be protected from harm. Those are the only grounds on which a licensing, a premises licence can be objected to. Now, unless you actually trot along and go to the premises licence, your cause is lost. On one occasion I've been involved with, where I managed to persuade the licensing officials on that occasion that it was unfair to grant a license for three years and just for one, that was appealed, because you can't only grant the licensing councillors can object to. They can say they will accept that license or they will reject it. They can't say, oh well, why don't we just have it for 1 year? So there was no way that the licensing authority, if they were satisfied that the 4 licensing objectives could be met, they had to grant it for 6 days. Now, the events license is something different. The events license doesn't have to grant an event for 6 days. It could grant it for 3. So that's up to Southwark Events team to think about that. If there's sufficient objections from local residents that really their lives are being made to be such utter hell, their children cannot sleep at night, all those good things, then those are the points that they have to put in when they object to the events license. That's all I want to say.
And can I just say, the events license is done on an annual basis.
Yeah.
So we go through this process.
But for some reason, the premises license is forever.
Yeah.
They
yeah,
can come back for 6 days forever.
But you can't, I mean, the event can't happen.
It's not good
without
an event license.
Yeah. And I think, sorry, just to say, though, reiterate there what Patty said and Charlie, it's open until the 7th of January.
8th.
Or 8th. So, you know, and again, and I can sense in the room, people feel, well, what's the point?
There is a point. There absolutely is a point. You're here tonight, so...
So we won't be in the same situation as last year, when actually it got to about 3 weeks before the event.
I think that was because of the changeover of the flood elimination.
I didn't care what it was.
Well, it was.
It was not good enough.
It was not good.
Well,
it was.
Because we all knew it was in the bag.
It's
probably all in the bag anyway, chaps. So,
yeah.
You know.
But
yeah. Everything you've said tonight, we've got to write it all in to you now.
Just email your responses in.
I already have pretty much everything.
Well, the Friends of the Park have actually emailed the local councillors. Surprise, surprise, who haven't bothered to reply.
Yeah, our local councillor is
so
the licensing person.
So do write to your
person.
Councillors. Maybe they'll bother to reply to someone.
Yeah.
Well,
you're not there to hear me anyway.
Okay.
Well,
so is that it?
Unless
yeah.
Anyone else has anything else. Thank you. Thank you. We'll close the meeting now online. Thank you for coming.
Oh my God, what's he going to say?